Ladies and gentlemen, after a long sabbatical, the legends of podcasting, Mick Dunn and Mark Dobson, have finally found time in the diary to connect again. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please put your hands together for Risking Failure?
Oh, good grief. How are you, sir? It has been too long.
Mate, I've missed you. And sincerely, it's been so odd to not spend time with you. And then
You've had people contacting, asking you what's going on.
Yes, just they say they check the podcast to see if there's another episode, and there's not. And
this is just going to be such a surprise. It's just going to be wonderful for people.
It's a shame because we, you know, people want to keep listening, but because this is not our core business, this is a bonus activity
project. Well, we hung out quite a bit in September when I was in Australia for a little while, so that was awesome. I thought we were going to nail down a couple of episodes then, but we really just got a little bit, just enjoyed the hanging out part. So anyway, life has been like that, I feel like, for the last number of months, and it's good to be back.
Tell you what, I did function for the Department of Primary Industries in New South Wales a couple of weeks ago.
That's similar.
Yeah, I know. No, they're actually a good bunch of people, but I think I succeed in those environments because everything else is a little bit dry. but I actually, in actual fact, I got there and it was a great bunch of people. They smashed their targets and there was a great energy in the room, great bunch of people, pretty honest conversation. But so I did my presentation and had a great afternoon. And as I was finishing, they said, apparently you got a podcast. We'd all, you know, love to tune in. And the gap between what I do on stage and what I teach and then what we talk about, Nick,
is quite a chasm.
I'm like, oh, I do have a podcast. Because, you know, when they're asking, they've enjoyed what they've just listened to, but that doesn't mean that these episodes are a reflection of what brought them into the dialogue.
Obviously I'm not in the room, so I wouldn't know. But I don't know, mate. I've just always been a believer of how you do anything is how you do everything. And I just think if somebody's interested in what you're doing or what you've got to say on stage, and no matter what context you do it in, I think if you're just doing it in the same authenticity, it will carry forward. And I really feel like your work and what you do shows up here all day long, because clearly we're not working on this all day long. But I think there should be some kind of a leverage point for your work. But I do think that I think it's a good, honest reflection, and not just you, but it's a good place for people to. Sometimes you just hear people's polished work, you know, like if you. And people like hearing that fly on the wall stuff, right? Like, I think that's why podcasts have been so engaging for people, because they hear somebody like Anthony Robbins on a stage, and even though he's ad-libbing it, it just sounds and feels so polished and researched and executed, and they probably would like to be hearing all of the background exploration that forms that concept, or the learning, or the wrestling. Like, what does this person wrestle with? And we just never get to hear those things.
It's interesting. The other thing that happens though is I've had this happen quite a lot lately. Is because people hear the show and go on courses, they think they know me, and some people are really good at it. There's a few people that I've chatted to and they've come up like, oh, I feel like I know you. And actually, Damien Gogol. Gogol, how do I spell it? Say Damien's last name, do you remember?
Yeah, Damien Gogol.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said it ages ago when we did that group podcast, and he said, you know, I'm listening, I want to call you guys and say, A, B, and C. He says, but I realize that, you know, I don't know you. I don't know all the conversation. And he probably knows this better than most listeners, but he had that awareness that just because he thinks he understands something, he can't just call, you know, still be weird to call us up and give us advice, say, you know, because they've been, people have been listening to this. But I've had quite a lot. Actually, over the last year, I've had just people cross paths with me and then think that we're best friends. And I do. I like them. We're acquaintances. We know each other. But there's a clear chasm for me between public life and private life. So I'm always telling stories about, you know, life and stuff. But there are so many stories that I do not choose to say. And like in any person shouldn't say, you know. Mm-hmm. And like we know we're public. We know this is going out to the world. So you know, we're measured. And sometimes we're not. Sometimes we let our guard down a little bit. But it's just been interesting if I'm honest, how invasive that is from people when they sort of suggest they know you and misconstrued, you know, where the relationship sits, where we actually haven't clocked up hours together, you know, like it's really been odd this year. And I think because I've done a lot more public stuff, I think I'm experiencing it. I didn't know I was going to talk about that, but it's just, you know, because I listen to other people and there's some great shows and I feel like I know them at some level, but then also because I think we do this, you also know, yeah, but there's a whole thing that you just wouldn't have access to.
It's funny because...
Right, and anyone's like...
Yeah, it's so weird because I don't know, like, I'm trying to think back because I reached out to Timbo Reed. And that was quite a number of years ago. But I just remember doing it in such a way where I just remember being down. I was staying with you in Rye, and I was like, I'm going to be driving right through where I know Tim Reed lives because of him talking about where he lives in the podcast. He's had an influence on me in giving me ideas that helped me understand that I could just have my own voice and do these things that we're doing right here. That have just been really helpful and given me just like changed the game for me and gone, oh, I could start a podcast. This is really fun. And I do remember reaching out, but not wanting to be like sounding like some kind of fanboy or trying to get free advice. But I was like, I really appreciate what you've done. And I'd be happy to buy you lunch, not because I want to abuse your time or steal your ideas. Yeah. I just want to say thank you. And if you're up for it, I'm happy to do that and no harm done. And it was great. I had an awesome lunch with him and hung out. And that was really nice.
But that wasn't your first contact with him, was it? Like you'd been in dialogue, you'd be in one of his groups or something, hadn't you?
I can't remember, to be honest with you. I might have been.
I feel like you already had been because – if somebody contacted me like that, and they do, I screen it because it's very tricky position because this is not going to come across well.
It's okay. Most of what you say doesn't
come across well.
Just,
you know. It's a very tricky position because you said, you know, I'd love to buy you lunch and to say thank you. And...
Well, but I remember crafting an email. It was like, it can't be the I'd love to pick your brain or I'd love to buy you lunch or any of that stuff. I do think you're right. I do think I was part of his, you know, like let's just say I was a paying customer.
If people are already in my established community, I'm open-minded. That. If it's someone completely out of the blue, I'm very guarded because...
Yeah.
Like, you know, like if I look at us, we you and I can't get time together. We find it really difficult to do this. We love it, but we find it difficult. So if I've got time free for lunch, you know, I'm really deliberate about who I'm going to spend that time with. But this is where it's tricky. I'm not disrespecting that thank you. But it's not sustainable. Some of those ways that people want to say thank you.
Time. Well,
yeah, it's just not a, you just can't like it's a very odd situation when you're high profile. Like anyway, go on.
I think that, What I've kind of found that I respect somewhat after, I wouldn't say after doing this, just in general, I feel like I have a greater awareness of the fact that sometimes people just need to sit on the couch and do nothing. And that is something. And I think that when people sometimes look at somebody else's time, they assume that if they don't have time to meet with me or do XYZ, it must mean they are so busy and scheduled that they don't have time, or they're just inconsiderate. And it's like this not leaving room for the fact that people just need to have time to just vegetate and do nothing. But the bigger issue is like committing to, I don't know. Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't think we need to dive into it. I mean, it's not like a massive problem. No, issue. It sounds, so it's kind of like,
and also it sounds, it's a bit self-indulgent. It's a bit of a unique problem.
It's not that big of a problem either.
But it's just an odd thing. I tell you what it's odd about. It's just because it's such an odd thing. You don't really know how to respond. Like out of left field.
Well, what I was going to, actually, one thing I was going to say, because I mean, I've been living overseas for so many years, and I don't do anything like what you do, right? I mean, we have this podcast, but it's not like I don't have anything that I do that actually circles around this. So it's not as though I have a community I bring into this in any way, shape, or form. So it's interesting. For 15, 18 years, I've never run into somebody at the shops.
Yeah, I know. And then when you're with me at the football, we go to the members of the football during final season. We mix the Richmond supporter, so he's there and I'm there, and it's bloody fantastic. And we're in the member section, and who's elite now? Knows everyone. Everyone. I don't know anybody in the members. I know all the people in the outer. That's who I am. And then I'm high profile outer quality. You are like in the inner membership circle. Oh Mick. I'm like, guys. I tell you what. Seriously, usually what happens in my life is that someone comes up and says hello to me and they say, thank you very much, or that was really interesting, I wanted to catch you, or I saw you here, and chat, chat, chat. And all my friends are standing there waiting, bored, waiting on their phone. No, that's okay, being polite. I was consistently waiting, not even being introduced, just nobody, just, and Mick's like, oh, how you going? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, my private school buddy. Oh, my other private school buddy. Oh, this is the buddy of my other private school buddy. Oh, it's kind of sweet.
Guys, this is my guest.
I was your bloody guest.
He's from the public. I gotta one up you sometime. But
you did. You got recognized, and it slows down your day. That's what I mean. It slows down your day, right? It was good to see those people, and it was great. But it's just a different element. And anyway, I sound too whiny about this. I feel like I wish I didn't bring this up. I hate bringing up sort of topics, actually. Anyway, the actual topic for the day wasn't decided. So, folks, what's happened is Mick and I are in an odd place, right? So I have sort of taken my foot off the gas for the end of the year. There's 15 days to Christmas to go, and just the way my year is that I sort of folded up most responsibilities as of today, really, and then I've got stuff to do. So I'm getting a bit introspective like I would normally in January. I'm actually getting a little bit, what does next year look like and what do I need to do? And I'm trying to listen to the path. Like a couple of days ago, I got right in my head. I read a lot of books and I was right in my head about how we're going to grow next year and what we were going to do and what I wanted to do. And then I actually got myself in a real muddle because it was just too theoretical in my head rather than, you know, in my heart or my gut or whatever you want to call it. And I was starting to come out of that, but so I'm at this sort of like, hey, let's explore. And I'm about to go on a 3 days with Brad, Ben, Ryan, and Janesh and myself, and we're all just workshopping our lives, just a boys' weekend. It's like, so I'm like, I'm in a good space. Meanwhile, Mick is in America. It's the winter's coming in. He's got business responsibility everywhere. He's packing up his house. He's working long hours because he's got two businesses going at the moment. And the truth is he's just come onto this call with his level of misery that is very challenging for me as being an upbeat, positive. I'll tell you what, if we had done this podcast 2 days ago, I would have been an entirely different cat. But so when we decided what we're going to talk about, we were like, well, I don't know, let's just start. We haven't seen each other or spoken to each other for a long time, but we're in two different patches. Did I adequately sum that up, Mick?
Yeah, I'm feeling the burn right now. I'm probably, I've been getting your blog posts day to day, and dead set, I've been just going, I don't fucking have time to like...
Just to give an indication, folks, they're 60 seconds. They're 56 seconds.
I know. That's all right. But like, so I was wanting to talk to you about it. And at the same time, I was like, I just feel like I've just got a multiple deadlines. It's nothing like anyone else doesn't have. You just go through those patches in life where all of the deadlines are converging and you're just doing it all. So you can, you know, literally after the 15th of December, life is easy again. Yeah, I was just getting the emails from you talking about end of year and, you know, how to finish up the year with a, you know, bang and stuff. And I was like, my mind is not there right now because I'm just, just not. So clearly, you know, we're all in different places and spaces.
But this is an interesting discussion in its own right because I've been getting emails from people saying they absolutely love this video blog. So backtrack, people. What I'm doing is a 30-day blog going into Christmas. Video blog gets posted on LinkedIn, Facebook, and on my webpage. So you just go to Dobbo page. Mm-hmm. And it's about a minute to a minute and a half every day, the 30-day work days, counting down to closing off the year. The idea is close off 2017 really strong by ticking off two or three things that you really want to get done. And I'm sort of coaching people through, well, how are you going to make sure that happens? And then also you want to be starting to put some things in place for 2018. And a lot of it is just sorting through the crap because we're overwhelmed. So I've been getting emails from people saying, this is the best thing ever. Please thank you. Keep them coming. I've had other emails saying, I want to buy these. Can I have this every day somehow? My answer is no, at this stage anyway. And then there's other people that, you know, like you, that's not on the cards. And for me, a little while ago, like I've been listening to podcasts lately because I've been so busy doing, I just needed to do. It wasn't a time for sharpening the saw, if you like, or it wasn't a time to pick direction, because sometimes I think and listen to a podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's just not the time. But yeah,
what's going on for me right now. It's like I'm not in a searching mode. I'm in an execution mode. Like I'm just like, I know what has to be done. I'm just so... busy doing that they'll cycle back like we always do to the point of thinking about what's happening next and where I want to go. But saying I don't have time is a really bad statement. I would probably take that back. It's just more as you just mentioned, like you there's times when you're executing and other times when you're figuring out what you want to do and
it's headspace, you know, because you know you're saying before people don't necessarily appreciate sometimes you need a bum on the couch. Like that's one of the things that I've learned is just because I've got the evening free doesn't mean I need to fill it. And sometimes like I feel like my head has a limit to what it can handle, like chewing food. Like there's a limit to how much you can put in your mouth and still be able to chew it in a reasonable way. And I feel like when you're in execution mode, or especially being asked to do things that are not necessarily as joyful, but they're functional, they need to get done, but they're not, they need to get done because of life and we've got to eat and stuff and it's a responsibility, but it's not the aspect of the job we enjoy or we find fulfilling. It burns up more mental energy and then you just don't have the time for that new stimulus for me. And I actually find myself I probably could be better at this. What I've been finding is I've been getting in that mood, that mode, whatever you want to call it, that you're in that execution mode or that where you're brainful. And I had a conversation with quite a few people that I know and love and people like you that are friends and peers, and I'll be in this mood, and you're actually quite a good listener on this. But sometimes my friends are so driven or proactive or wanting to help, or that they can give me advice or guidance, or like, what about that? And I've actually got to say, just stop, please stop. Because on the outside, I look like I got it together. But I can't take another thing in, and it's not healthy. And it's very difficult because the thing that they're saying is right. I can see value in it, but I can't see value in it right now. And I'm also trying to assess that if I was going to do one thing, is that the thing? Or am I really, based on how much energy I've got left, am I going to get a reward on that activity? But I find it really difficult because I don't want to be that person that I can come across rude. I don't want to be rude, but sometimes I actually literally say, and I lift my hand, you can't see me here, I'm sort of lifting my hand, I'm sort of sitting very relaxed in my chair, but I lift my hand and sort of say, please just stop. Because I can't do any more of that right now. On another day, I'd be fine, but also I find sometimes if I've chosen my direction and I'm clear on that, I'm very happy to hear what the next idea is. But if I haven't chosen my direction, that's just noise. And it's interesting because what I've been doing, and I didn't even ask Mick, but every day I email out this blog, but I'm emailing it out to people who have touched base with me and said, hey, can you please send me those? Because otherwise it gets overwhelming. But I never asked Mick. I just chucked him on this little list. Mm-hmm. So he's been getting these every day, but he didn't ask for them. Mm-hmm. But the people who love them ask for them, so that's why they love them.
Yeah, I started getting them as they started trickling in, and I watched the first couple, but I found I was watching because we haven't been talking much, and I just wanted to see what you're up to. Like, right. So I was mostly interested because I was like, oh, this is cool. I want to see what you're doing. But I found myself going, I'm not ready to do this right now. Like, yeah, this is not where my head's right at, unfortunately. It had got nothing to do with your content or anything like that. It was just like, I'm just not there. It's almost like my end of year is in February or something like that, as far as my brain is concerned. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
It's just interesting that the different, I don't know, just, and also to be able to know you're in that stage and be able to articulate it and also manage it. Because sometimes I find when I'm burnt out like that, I get a bit snappy, or I need to, say, sit on the couch more or something, like just switch off more. And
so I got something interesting.
Stop it. You do not.
Meaty that. I think so. Have you read the book Sapiens?
No, I think I have that book around. I think I ordered it.
You've got to read this. I listened to it on Audible. It is an absolutely long book. I've never seen it, so I presume it's like really thick. But I'm still going through it. And I've just, it's like a long-term project for the last 2 years I've been going back to and listening to.
Wow.
But it's really talking about the history of the human species, how Homo sapiens.
Oh, you've mentioned this before. Yep, going,
to,
yep, yep.
To
yep,
rule
yep,
the planet. And I have touched on some of these things before and some of the things we're talking about with respect to my mind often seems to have this fascination and like continuously thinking about like, what did the caveman do? And try to simplify things from that perspective sometimes. Did the caveman have this problem? If not, is it a problem? So, but what this book, it's just so interesting. And it's the guy, that the level of work this guy had to go to and research to pull this together is just, it's so humbling to listen to and go, oh my gosh, I'm nothing compared to what this guy's body of work is. But really, the context of a lot of the reason he was focusing on why Homo sapiens came to be the successful, basically the dominant species of the planet, and overcame the Neanderthal man and all of the other, you know, various species of Homo erectus was our ability, some of the biological things obviously, but what that led to was imagination really, and our ability to tell a story. And so what that came down to is like, there's no, like, there could be a lion coming across, you know, the, you know, coming out of the jungle or whatever. And there's many animals that will communicate to one another saying, look, there's a lion, there's danger.
Right.
And human beings will do that too. But the human being is the only one that will say, that's the lion. And the lion represents courage. And if you pray to the lion, or if you worship the lion, or if you kill the lion, you will bring, you know, forever luck to your family. If you eat the lion's, you know, tail, then you'll be cured of this. Like, we're the only species that would create those things. And what he was saying that meant was, what's the reason that human beings, or Homo sapiens, had dominated the planet is we're also the only ones that have managed to assemble and really organize ourselves in really large numbers. So you've talked about before, even on this podcast, among other things, you've probably heard the same research that human beings are only really built to have a tribe of about 150. And once you exceed 150, you either need to split off into other tribes, or it's just too much to handle. You can't actually know more than about 150 people at any given one time. But we can assemble in groups of millions based on a common idea, which no other species can do. And so an example of this was organized religion, of creating a story and having everybody believe it. And so you now become part of a group, and within that group there's safety. And the natural instinct is for any other group that is against or different to that is a threat. And this is a way for people that don't even know each other to automatically have a common thing and to be able to basically play nicely, even though they're from different tribes. Mm-hmm. And so what it sort of has me thinking a lot these days is, on all manners of like current, you know, issues in society, but when we're talking about things like goals and stuff, after a while I start going, well, is this just a story we're telling ourselves? Like, these are all things after a while that we're just making up.
I agree.
And so I heard an interview with the guy that wrote that book, and the way this guy goes on like 60-day meditation retreats is really fascinating character. And I wish I could say his name, but you could just look up Sapiens and yeah, see it. And you could search in one of the conversations I'd heard was between him and Sam Harris, who I listened to. Then another guy, James Altucher, who was on his show as well. I had to search specifically for the guy's name. And what he said was interesting, because he said, if something can suffer, then it's real. If it can't suffer, it's not real. It's something we've created. It's imaginary. It doesn't really exist. So he was like, you know, people would say Germany suffered in, you know, whatever, the war, or the Jews suffered. He was like, that's like, he's like, Germany doesn't exist. America doesn't exist. It's a figment of our imagination. We've made up America. There's no such thing as America. It's not real.
It's a personality we've given to a location where people live, but it's...
And nationality was one of those big other ones, yeah, just like religion, that allow us all to come together.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really interesting in current day events, right? Because there's this battle going on that I've been finding with, like, a lot of people on the really liberal side with identity politics, like talking about like, we are this, we're that, like we're these little subsets and we demand our rights. And they band together that way and create commonality, but that creates division at the same time, because the people that are not that feel that division. Meanwhile, you got like these nationalists, like this Trump group, that's all about America. And they're creating the exact same thing that the gay, lesbian, black, whatever are in America. They're doing the same thing on a global level, saying we're America. And everybody else is going, well, fuck you then. And which is really interesting. And it's all imaginary. It all, none of it is actually there. We're just believing it's there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jamie Foxx talks about on that Tim Ferriss podcast that he's talking about, who's that male singer that everybody trashes, the young guy? Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
He says, if you met him, he's fantastic. He says, but in the newspapers, the newspapers need a good guy, they need a bad guy, they need someone who's a bit lost, they need a romance story. Mm-hmm. And these people, the stories that you read about people, are just stories. They're not actually the person in any way. Mm. They're just this construct that will sell a paper. So yes, I'm running with you. I agree. Go on.
Yeah, and so what I've come to be sort of like thinking about is like when it comes down to things like my goals and like what I want to do with my time and my efforts and all of that. As I began to get your thread, I suddenly realized, well, I'm thinking about that and going, well, what's real? Like, what is it that's actually happening here? Am I about, like, if I'm not ready to go through what I was doing right now, but I would probably go through it at some point in the next near future. If I did do that, what is it that I'd actually be trying to create? Because would I just be making something up, like imagining something that I move towards that doesn't really exist, and therefore is that a bad thing or a good thing? Mm. I'm just...
I hear you. It's a great question, because I actually had that question... even before when we were just sitting on the phone, because Mick and I had chatted for about an hour or so beforehand, we hadn't spoken to each other, and sitting on the couch here, and I'm looking around my office, and I'm thinking... Like, I really am at a stage in my life where I actually understand the idea that there's nothing to achieve. And am I having a good day today? And am I enjoying this experience?
Yes, yes.
Because I run programs on goals, but my agenda on that is you just got to craft what you want to experience and move into what you want to experience. There's nothing to achieve. It doesn't matter. The question is, you know, you're not going to get to do this again. This is it. Like, you get to just enjoy it. And it's a very difficult, but what you're adding to this is the construct that we put around that there's something that if we achieve, then everything's going to get better. And if I just get this thing done, and I actually think that's why a lot of people listen to my videos for the 30 days before Christmas, is because a lot of what I'm saying is showing them how to notice all the crap that doesn't matter. Here you're stressed about this, but really it's this, you know, what do you want to do? Like, and it's, I'm actually helping them. And people have said that as much to me. They've never felt so organized. They've unpacked what's actually going on. They're not in the flurry of the construct. Mm-hmm. When we say construct, we mean the idea or story we tell. Like, you know, for example, one of the ones is this time of year, moving into Christmas, everybody has to catch up before Christmas, as if after Christmas we're no longer available to have any social functions. And where did this idea come from that it all has to be done before Christmas? Where, you know, and it just puts an unnecessary pressure on us. And so, like, that goal of, like, we've got to see each other, you're like, well, actually, is that making me happier, or is that feeling like a burden? And one of the challenges this time of year is there's so many things that we feel like we should get done or get ticked off, and it's just a conversation in our head. See, this is where it comes out. How do you want to live? Actually, I said this funny thing the other day. Oh, it sounds a bit arrogant, but, you know, it accidentally just came out. But I was saying to people how, like, you got to ask not what you want to achieve, but how do you want to live? And I said, you know, for example, if you love exercising, you're going to be ripped, you know, or if you love eating a really healthy diet, you'll be ripped. But if you want to get ripped, but you love ice cream, you've got a problem, you know, those two things don't add. So you got to choose, how do you want to live? Because if you, you know, because your body almost a natural byproduct. And I said, for example, and I'm pointing to myself, I was like, I like wine. This is a wine body. This is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And if I love exercise, then I'll have a different body. This body is a reflection of who I like to be, not what I want to achieve.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point.
If I go, geez, I'd really love to run a marathon, I'm like, well, my body would transform to match an expression of what I love to do.
Hmm.
And so the goal fundamentally has this idea that it's in the future and it gets ticked off. And
right.
And deeper than that, it's about there's a myth of permanence, that that things can stay the same, and that when I get everything in order, I will then be happy. Once I've got that car, it's mm-hmm. locked in. And mm-hmm. permanence is a very difficult idea to get, a very difficult construct to get your head around.
Right, and I don't necessarily report that I think I'm exploring or have found the reason why that's a temporary. Mm-hmm. Like the other day, I was driving to a job site where we have basically a December 15th deadline. I got a contract, I got a budget, and a deadline, and something that I got to do. And a couple of weeks ago, it was creating a lot of stress. For a lot of different people, and we're all trying to just figure out how we're going to get it done together. And I found myself, you know, I'd been up till 1 a.m. every night doing work on stuff I wasn't getting done during the day because I was just so strung out in my daytime on these projects. And I'm driving, and I found myself saying, because I just listened to this conversation where this guy was saying, if it can't suffer, it doesn't exist. So then I was like, all right, so I got a December 15th deadline. I got this project. I'm doing all of this stuff. And I was like, I guess what this guy's saying is like none of that actually exists. And I was like, he is fucking right. This is all a figment of imagination. The deadline is imaginary thing. The dates right. are all imaginary. The calendar's imaginary. The money is the biggest thing that this guy was talking about within both the book and in particularly in conversation. He's saying the number one thing out of all of the stories we've ever told ourselves, the biggest uniting thing has been money. We have told ourselves this imaginary story that the coin in your pocket is worth something and we're willing to trade for that. And it's basically saying, well, I'm getting, you know, a cow from you, but I don't have 10 chickens to give you for your cow. So, you know, instead I'm going to give you this thing that represents 10 chickens. And then that way you'll be able to go out and get your 10 chickens from the guy that has them. That's really all we're talking about. It's just this imaginary 10 chickens in your hand or half a cow or whatever it is that you want to say it's worth, but whatever it is, it's a complete figment of imagination. So then again, I was like, well, he's right on that. So I've got a budget that's imaginary. I've got a timeline that's imaginary. I've got a calendar that somebody made up, truthfully, based on who knows where that all came from. I strip it all back down to, you know, a caveman. I'm like, none of this stuff actually exists. I'm installing these modern engineered heat pump systems that they're providing heating. Like, it's not to say they don't tangibly exist, but that the point is that they don't actually, they provide comfort, but that's it. Like, they don't even exist. Like,
the suffering is that the person who's receiving the heat or the cold mm-hmm. is suffering, and we say, well, we'd like to contribute to that. But then we go and put all these rules around that, what the timelines, how much we'll pay for that, what to switch, who's everybody's role is. And then we, sometimes it's really helpful because that person needs to get warm, likes that. But there's also a point where it's actually nonsense. There's rules for the sake of rules. And I find sometimes I don't fit into corporate environments because I just look at all their rules and think this is stupid. Like every time I do a presentation, they say, now will you be using PowerPoint? And I say, no, I won't need it. And they say, are you sure? Say, yeah. And then I get a call or an email. Hey, listen, we just think that it's probably best if you do use PowerPoint. And because that's just how it's done, and they think everybody will feel better. But I'm like, well, actually, they just think it'll feel better because I've been in front of an audience thousands and thousands and thousands of times, and no one has ever said to me, fucking hell, mate, so glad you had PowerPoint. I would have been fucked without that. Like, like if I do a great PowerPoint presentation but I'm boring as shit, they're like, that doesn't rescue me. They're actually not paying for PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. So and this is so, and then they say, oh, can you write a report on that? And I'm like, well, who's going to read it? Like, it's just going to sit in a drawer. And then when you challenge them, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're probably right. So I'm like, no. So even today, I went to a meeting with a company. I run this workshop with them, and we were debriefing, and I had all the notes from the meeting, and I pulled out of my bag, swear to God, it's true, 4 sheets of butcher's paper, you know, that's been stuck up on the wall, and I had folded it all up, and I had all the notes because I took the notes on the day on butcher's paper, and I just folded them up, and when I came and I was going to display them the notes, I was like, and I just pulled the butcher's paper out because I could have spent, you know, 4 hours typing it up and writing and everything, but that's not value. The value is in then understanding what's going on here so they can act on it. And some of my clients are really receptive to that, but I've tried to in my life, and that's what I'm even doing with these videos, is trying to get people to realize that half the things that they think matter don't matter.
Right. And that's like, keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
So the next thing that's really hard here is that when you really get into this, and this is where it's been really challenging, is that if I'm advising a really capable athlete, and I start to, and I know that I don't believe anything matters, and I start to tell them this doesn't matter, and they follow my line of thinking, then they can get to a point where they're not as engaged in the goal. And even I did a presentation, I've got a performance program, Live More Performance, and on it I talk about a whole lot of different tools I've got to increase someone's performance on just the right day, what's the ingredient you're going to need. And eventually I get to a point of like, you know, you've got to be aware of someone's spiritual journey, because there comes a point when the answer is actually a spiritual one. Now, I had somebody come up after me afterwards and say, hey, listen, really love to get you to run this workshop at our company. He goes, but of course, just let go of all that spiritual bullshit, hey? And because he wasn't ready. But the truth is, having got some runs on the board, there is a point when the spiritual matters, and the spiritual moves you into a point which says this doesn't matter. So then we have to ask the question, then why am I doing this? And if you're brave enough to stare that question in the face, then you get a beautiful answer that brings you a new sense of life that you didn't have before.
Right.
But you have to be brave enough to ask the question and stare it in the face.
And, you know, some of that is like, you know, for this case, it was like, this is a short-term thing in terms of my project, for instance, that I was like, it's not an area where I'm going to be investing long-term, like in the people and all of that. It's just like that there was people at work with me where I was like, I found myself trying to protect those relationships and not burn people out and be respectful of their time and their effort and their families, while not letting somebody else's imaginary story overcome what we are doing. I don't know if this makes sense, but it was an imposed time. I mean, it's like any project, we're on schedule, on budget, all of those things. But at the same time, I was like, well, there's some stress going on here amongst the team, the group, but in actual essence, it's imaginary because it's imposed by somebody who has an imaginary date and an imaginary budget. And the reality of every other project I've ever been on is that when you reflect back on projects I completed 7 years ago, nobody remembers what day it was completed. It doesn't matter if it was done on the 15th of December or the 3rd of February. It got done. And every time it's been done on schedule, but the reality is that was an imaginary thing. And it was because somebody had a different story that date represented, whatever. It was end of budget season. It was something about them getting the thing they needed. And it was like, just for me, it was like, okay, that's easier for me to just like, that's what we're doing here. We're just working through somebody else's story to help, you know, like, make them feel comfortable or make them, you know, feel good that's about exactly what they're doing. And that's what we're doing. We're not actually trying to install these things on a time and budget. And when our little part of their story is complete, we'll be moving on, but we'll always be coming back to our story. And our story is this is what we do. And I just found that not like, it's not like it was like bells ringing, like liberation type thing. I just found it was like, oh, I haven't really looked at issues that way before. I've usually wrestled through strategy on how to just sort of appease different people and that sort of thing, rather than just kind of sitting back and going, none of this actually exists. This is just a figment of an imagination. So it just kind of came back to something I hear a lot out of Seth Godin's mouth, is like the same thing as like the stories that we tell ourselves. Like we convince ourselves of all of these things, and many times they just don't even exist. But there's so much power in that as well, that as human beings we're so drawn to that. So it's an interesting thing. It's like I've been finding myself reflecting more on that, like what is the story I'm trying to develop and tell myself that's meaningful, that my kids would want to live into and be a part of, because it's all gonna be imaginary, so it may as well be interesting and not, you know, I don't know. So it just had me reflecting a little differently when I started seeing your videos coming through, because I was like, I wonder how I would construct around that.
It's interesting. Now everybody's listening to this and they're all sitting there asking, hang on, so what is the point then if there's no goals and everything's a construct?
Yeah.
So we've really ruined their day. But I like what you said about, you know, what do I want my kids to believe in? And you also said something, and I'm pointing this out because I think that the answers are right in front of people, but we miss them. But, you know, all those people are working together to deliver that project that you're involved in with work. And what you're recognizing is all these people believe the construct is real. And when we care about people, we go, okay, I'm going to help you do this. But what I'm actually more concerned about is you as a person and the relationship, and I'm going to support you. And it's like when a little kid's upset about something, and we know it really doesn't matter on the scale of things, that we can buy another glass because they broke, or, you know, a little wipe off the wall. But it's real to them. And our job is just to care about the relationships we are in with people. And one of the things that's been really powerful through the years working with the athletes, as if there's something, there you go, there's another construct for you, right? They're just regular people that just happen to apply themselves to sport, which everybody watches, and therefore we think it's sexy. But what I have learned with these guys is that when they're doing it for themselves, there's going to be a limit to what they can do. That there will be success, and there can be success just doing it for yourself, but there's but it all falls down like a house of cards afterwards. Yet if you can be aware that there's that kid in the stand that's watching, and they need something to believe in, and there's some other people that you can give the experience of, say, victory to, or you can have the experience of doing something, knowing how great you are, or expressing what you're capable of, or delivering what you're capable of on the planet. This is the experience we're moving into, and it's not to be achieved, it's to be experienced or to be given, to be shared. There's actually a greater power in that. And I think that gets lost even with Christmas. Like, it's a complete construct, you know, Santa, chimneys, presents, like it's all just invented. But
yeah.
But we can say, well, we've got to remain sight of what is the intent, and you say, what is your intent? My intent is like, I want, you know, people bitch about, okay, I have to go to here, and then I have to go with this relative, and I've got this on, and I'm like, yeah, but these are people that are in our lives regularly, and how do we want to make them feel, and who do we need to show up as to be able to contribute that? And rather than fighting the construct, oh, I don't believe in Christmas, this is stupid, or I'm vegan, I think that's terrible, they killed that animal. I'm like, yeah, they're your construct as well. But,
right. You know, really, that's all still made up. And I think what I'm, you know, when I think about, I don't think it is a demotivating thing to be setting goals. I think as I strip it back to a hunter-gatherer, I think what I'm saying is like, I'm trying to work through, how do you not get caught up in saying, I want to catch, or I want to shoot 30 deer next month or next year. And instead realize that what's really going on is like, you're telling stories about saying in the spring, the deer like to come in from the east because that's the way that blah 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 happens, and there's like, you know, shoots coming up from these trees and they really love that, and that's, there's this story that you construct on how you're going to catch the deer, and you've got this goal of a number, but at the end of the day there's a reason you're looking for the deer, because you're solving some kind of a problem regarding a core human need of either food or community or contribution or something.
Ego.
And, right. And so, yeah. So it's like being attached to that seems like that's really important. And like, am I doing this because I'm trying to teach the young ones how to do this? Am I doing it because I'm trying to prove myself as the leader of whatever group and I'm the best hunter? Am I doing it because the people, you know, we as a community need food and it's do or die? And like, there's all these reasons to get 20 deer or to get one deer, but the experience of that seems to be what's much more important. But it's so hard to navigate that when there's the complexity of life that we live in, right? So I don't purport to have any of that shit figured out, other than just it's been a recent thinking of mine of like, it's just really fascinating stuff for me to reflect on and go,
So I'm running with this performance course. It's two-day course followed by 6 weeks online. And yesterday I was just watching over the, because the online's an hour of video, half an hour of audio, or this vice versa, something like that. And I was watching it back before I sent it out to everybody just to make sure it was up to speed and I was familiar with, you know, exactly where they're at their journey. And the last week of the program is troubleshooting. And in troubleshooting, you know, why aren't we moving forward? Like, if we've been coaching these people, we've used all these strategies, why aren't they moving forward, or why aren't we moving forward? And I was discussing exactly this topic, Nick, was that, is that they've set a goal and say they want to, you know, say you have 30 deer and store them and stuff. They've set a goal. But if they didn't get it, like, where did they come from? Because really they're saying 30 deer because they want, they've worked out all this and this is where the grass grows and this is what happened last year and it's the year of the dog and all this kind of shit. And they go, therefore, it probably concludes in 30 deer. But you've got to wind that back exactly and say, well, why are we even doing this? Because the goal is a projection of how we think we want it to play out, but it's our best guess. But if we get back down to the values that drove it, be it contribution or purpose or significance, then we can then assess when we're coaching someone's performance. Well, they say they want this and we haven't got it. And is it a construct? Is it a legitimate desire? What's at the root of this so that we can see, did we achieve even our root desire? Because, for example, if we did it for contribution, we say it's contribution, but you dig deeper and it's they actually haven't even been a generous person, then you're like, well, we're miles off the target. So I actually use this discussion to troubleshoot, to check the at the beginning and the end of a process, to check the authenticity of why are we even bothering. And if we're, and the other thing is that this year, because we had with Livemore, I got some feedback from people who had loved it last year but didn't come along to the day this year, and it came through the grapevine that they weren't coming because they said, oh, I really haven't done much since last year. And they didn't. They felt like it was, you know, you wouldn't go and do it again. They should have ticked some stuff off. And it provoked another discussion with another group at the same time, which was that usually by the end of the year, you got 60% of what you wanted and the 40% you missed. And people feel like a failure off the back of that. I'm like, no, that is the exact thing to discuss, because with the 60% that you achieved, somehow you were listening to yourself. There was an authenticity, an accuracy in... And the other part was too big a stretch, too big an extrapolation. Right? It didn't, you know, it was too much of a construct. And we want to have that discussion. So if you can put down in next year, you get 70% because you're listening better, you're understanding your motive, you're being better. So the things that you jot down that are as targets are natural expressions of and how you want to live. And
I remember listening to reading Robbins in Awaken the Giant Within when I was really young. It resonated with me at the time, but the story seemed to be something along the lines of him coaching some don't know, people in the military, snipers or something like that, doing shooting.
Yeah, I remember.
And yeah, he was talking about a really difficult target or whatever, and the number of times they'd hit that. And he was saying, as soon as you could go up in 100 shots, if you could hit it more than 5 times, like there's just this arbitrary number that he was talking about. There's like, once you got beyond this point, like he was like, it's not an accident anymore. You're doing it. You're following a pattern and it's hitting. It's not accident. You can't fluke it more than once. So if you do it more than once, maybe you fluked it 2 times, but if you do it 3, you did something all 3 of those times. And we just need to figure out what that was so you can do it a 4th time and a 5th time and keep doing that.
Right. That's right. That's
which
right.
is so true in terms of what you're saying. Because like in some ways what you're saying is like if you got 60% of the stuff, it's like, well, what did you do with that 60%? Because even if it was only 10%, it's focusing on what you did out of that 10% that was potent. And, you know, I mean, I would look back on my time of any time, year, whatever, days, week, and I don't know how I'd split anything and go percentage of this or this or that. I mean, yeah.
I'm with you. It's funny how clinically and naively we explore goals and what I prefer to call the design of our life. We just think and I openly say all the time, you just don't need goals. They're a clumsy tool. And I told you, I think I would have said on this podcast before, I got an email years ago by some guy aggressively attacking me saying, I came to your website looking for how the elite handle things and I come and reading all these articles expecting you to be this incredible influence on people, and I hear this absolute tripe about you don't need goals and, you know, you're completely misleading the community and it's irresponsible, blah, blah, blah. And I emailed back and said, mate, isn't it incredible that when you actually find something elite, you don't recognize it because you've got a preconceived idea of how it should look. He was just coming upon someone that agreed with his construct. But that's, we regurgitate this stuff. And it, one of the challenges for me has been that when you're a teenager and a goal is very important that age, you're looking for your identity and you're learning that you can achieve stuff. So you don't need a goal, but it's like a kid doesn't need to swim, but there's worth learning and getting some confidence in the water so they have an awareness of that. Like at Interlaken many years ago, you might remember when those two girls from Lithuania or something just jumped in the water because they saw everybody swimming and they just figured they must be able to do it as well. They'd never seen a body of water before and they sunk, you know, straight down. So you know, through everybody. So during those teenage years, we do teach goals because you need to understand them, grapple them, understand setting a target, moving towards it, customizing your activity so there's some discipline around it. But there's also a point where you let go of the goal. And I think, like reading, some people learn to read while other people continue to learn how to read. And they learn how to speed read. And speed reading isn't some masterful stroke. It's just that the person kept learning how to read. And I think with goals, you can keep learning how to do goals and refine. And it's not – the goal is just the wrong word. Like I market goals because I know that's what everybody's looking for. But really it's about how do you live as you want to live? How do you enjoy your days? How do you enjoy your life? How do you – sit at a desk like mine, which is quite messy today, and just go, it doesn't matter, I like my desk, this is me.
Well, the nice thing about goals is it's a positive word, it's an engaging one that in some ways it invokes in the way that something like meditation or yoga does. It's like it signifies a reserved space and time for consideration of something.
So true.
But then you look at some other stories that we've told ourselves, such as organized religion, and you start to immediately get limited by the language, because as soon as you say the word God, you've already started to
potentially buy into a construct,
somebody's like you've already pulled in somebody's Whereas what's interesting about goals is you're able to kind of pull somebody in it and like interrupt. It's not so embedded in people, but it can be a good,
yeah,
it can be a good way to like create that construct, right? Like, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's a socially acceptable.
Acceptable journey. And so you can meet people on that journey and take them somewhere with it, which is great. It's really hard to do that in a lot of other places. You know, in some ways, I guess, the reason I brought it up is just I've been finding myself circling back to that and the whole, you know, caveman stuff. And I still think those things probably existed at some level for really early human beings, but I just don't, it's hard to say what. One thing's for sure is that, you know, one thing I like to remind myself of is that language is a signature. It's a sign of something, which is really a feeling. Like I find myself wrestling with that a lot, where people hang so much on word and forget that word is a representation of a feeling. And so a lot of times when we're dealing with things like goals, we're talking about words that describe an experience, and the experience is also a representation of a feeling, and the feeling is really what we're trying to sort of gravitate towards. And it's not hard to see how easy it is to lose your way when you go from a simple lifestyle of hunting for food and gathering and building community. That's basically, and shelter and love. And then all of a sudden, you're catching a bear, you're eating the food, you're doing dances and stuff, and you're making things out of the bear skin. And then all of a sudden, stories start to develop of what to do with the bear skin and how to wear it. And all of a sudden, somebody wants the bear skin because that means that they're the chief, and shit gets out of control really quickly. And then you have the kind of imbalance that we have, and the kind of stuff that people are seeking so much, i.e. money and fame and fortune and whatever, but all of those are imaginary constructs, and so hard to not listen to that noise. I mean, I don't think it's ever been easy, but nowadays
I think it's hard. It's always getting harder, and I think it'll be harder for generations going more and more forward when there's just more and more noise. I think Russell Brand was talking in a video today about how, you know, what the future is a device that you sit in front of and you're actually addicted to due to the nature of the way it's designed. And the people sending you messages don't love you. They just want something from you. And you're like, geez, that's a tough future. But the thing that I was going to say to sort of close off, because just where I need to be and stuff, but also when you brought up how words, you know, basically carry an emotion. They're just little sounds. They're sort of some sort of emotion. I was curious about what we're going to call this podcast, because if we put another fucking episode about goals, no one's going to listen. And then if we put it at the start about Dobbo whining about being recognised on the street and people thinking they're his best friends, they're going to go, what a knob. And then if you go, oh, Mick's overwhelmed and got 56 seconds to listen to a video. You know, we've covered some ground in this, and
we'll find something.
That's where Seinfeld came up with this show, which was, it was a show about nothing. And it's great because there was nothing happening, but everything was happening. And yeah, anyway, so this is the show about nothing. This is the show about nothing where everything happens.
Yeah.
We solved life problems today, mate. We got rid of constructs. We went super spiritual. We make contributions to the planet. People are more passionate than ever about living the life they want. They're happy getting 60%. They go, they have 40%. They're like, bugger, it doesn't matter. It's just, I'm just going to be me. And I'm just so grateful that Mick and Dobbo have found time to podcast again for us. That's what they're going to say.
I will think of a good topic for it, mate. I don't know what to call this one, honestly. I think we might have to reflect on it for a second. just
good luck on that.
Imagine,
yeah, you've got all the time in the world to do that, right? Yeah.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news, and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.